I just drove back from Florida from New York, and my car's gauge reminded me that I had an A3 service that was overdue by 2,000 miles. I called the dealership, made an appointment for 2 days later, and I made that appointment as I was sitting in the car outside of the building that a fantastic massage therapist, Gustavo Silver, works in. I had just had a massage, and now I was waiting for Catherine to have her massage. Today's topic, body and mind communications, came up in our discussion as Gustavo worked on my body. I told him of a problem I seem to have had for years, and it seems to affect how I manage or do not manage my body. I explained that I bump into things on my boat way more often than seems natural. Granted, my boat is small, and I am not. But after 9 weeks living on board, I should have learned to be able to move around without hitting my head, shoulders, elbows, knees, shins, and toes. I wondered aloud if my inelegant movement, or how about clumsiness, was due to, one, not being fully inside my body, as if I'm only partially occupying it. I've had that thought over the years. The second possibility was not having understood my physical size, and even after understanding my real size, learning how to steer it. I have been surprised when I've seen my image reflected or standing in groups how large I am relative to other people. The third possibility was not having respectful or effective communication between my body and my mind. For almost all of my life, I have considered myself to be a mind. I overlooked my body and only judged it to be a vehicle or a tool or a machine to do what my mind told it to do. I ignored normal self-care, and in fact, I actually praised myself in my mind for being able and willing to deny normal physical needs such as food or rest or medical care. In retrospect, it feels as though my mind was constantly trying to prove its supremacy over my body. In the early 1970s, when I was in Colombia, South America, training in guerrilla and counter-guerrilla warfare, I concluded that nothing was physically impossible unless the mind believed it to be physically impossible. Otherwise, it was possible. I learned that if you were tracking enemy soldiers and you didn't need to rest or eat or sleep or stop, you would be able to catch up and engage them. It was inevitable. The body was the slave doing the bidding of the mind. A breakdown of the body represented a failure of the mind to command the body effectively. Gustavo's opinion of one aspect of my body problem is that through military training, I had learned to treat my body as a machine and to deny any feedback from it that would interfere with the mind's priority of the mission first. He had other clients who had retired from the military, and he was encountering the same problems with them. Going back into my Army days, when I first went into the Army, I remember a strong sense of relief that I experienced in basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I heard a lecture that said, "The mission comes first. Soldiers come second, and officers come third." It was the principle that the mission comes first that gave me relief, as I had just felt like I had just learned about gravity. That one stable datum, the mission comes first, made everything else in my military career organizable. I believe, and it's a quest for me, that there is a first energetic pattern that creates the disharmony in our consciousnesses, and while other patterns are added to it, it creates the circumstances in our lives that we struggle with, and which most of us seek to resolve or to overcome. We're not looking for the Holy Grail. We're looking to resolve that first energetic input that created disharmony in our consciousnesses, in my opinion. In many families in the U.S., intelligence or intellectual ability is emphasized above all other intelligences. It is true that some families and groups can really emphasize physical beauty over other values, musical abilities above other abilities, and physical abilities leading to great sports success above others. What interests me in this talk is how we learn to become aware of our bodies, but then enter institutionalized education where our minds are given great importance while we are told to sit still and make our bodies behave. Problems were seen to be a body misbehavior more than anything else. Early on, children are taught or forced into being toilet trained. And I get that it's inconvenient for parents to have dirty diapers to contend with, but you can imagine telling in words and attitude that something is wrong with his or her body as you're indicating to a child because it isn't toilet trained at 2 years old. Add in hundreds of scolding no's. No, no, no. When a child wants to use his or her hands to touch and explore one's own body, or objects of art or glassware or other things of value that are all around the house. It is when the body is completely under the domination of the mind that we run into real problems. Even though we are told the body and our emotions are the causes of our problems, particularly in religious settings, it is more likely that our minds, which are blaming our bodies and our emotions, are the real causes of our problems. I just started to review a recent National Geographic magazine of May 2017 with the cover story, "What is Genius?" I scanned but haven't read it, and I was hoping to see the word consciousness mentioned frequently. I didn't see the word while I scanned. In a book I read recently about sex was the phrase spectatoring, which I had never heard of. Spectatoring describes the mental activity of thinking about your own participation during sex. It means you are both a participant involved in the sex and a spectator observing yourself as you have sex. This tendency apparently affects both men and women, and it's talking about the mind becoming too active in what is essentially a physical activity that should be very enjoyable. And it minimizes the body's role in the sex because the mind takes over. Now, I guess this is more of an issue for an older person rather than younger people. As a teenage boy, there was not much thinking going on when my body got activated, and I think that's probably true of females as well. In the process of aging, we have experiences, including thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. To me, that means a person who is 50 has had more thoughts, feelings, words, and actions than somebody who is 20 years old. As Napoleon Hill said in his important book, Think and Grow Rich, thoughts are things. Thoughts attract other thoughts of a similar vibrational nature. That means thoughts grow larger and more powerful. I suggest that some 50-year-old persons have larger and more powerful thoughts than 20-year-old people. When you see very young children of different races playing harmoniously together, it's because the thoughts and feelings of prejudice and bigotry have not yet taken root and flourished in their consciousnesses. But if you were to visit those same children in 5 to 8 or 10 years later, the observation is likely to be dramatically different. The kids would have been taught or would have learned to compare, judge, fear, and reject others as different and bad. The minds of these children would have replaced innocence with suspicion, fun and abandon with tentative and anxious self-protection. I finished reading the National Geographic article about genius. The author and the quoted researchers exclusively talked about the brain, the physical tissue of the brain, genes, and DNA as containing the explanation of genius, although the geniuses themselves that were quoted talk about how flashes of insight, intuition, hard work, patience, and persistence, along with being nurtured as they develop their talents. Several specifically mentioned getting their minds out of the way so their bodies could play their music. The word consciousness is never mentioned in the story. In the early 1970s, I was initiated into Transcendental Meditation, TM. In that initiation process on a Saturday morning in Panama, I experienced bliss for the first and only time in my life. I was absolutely blown away. I spent the next 7 years meditating twice a day, seeking to re-experience bliss. It never happened. Once or twice I got a little close, but it never happened. The harder my mind told me to try, the further away bliss became. I always considered myself a mind more than a body or a spirit. Unfortunately, I ignored the main point of TM, which was to quiet the mind and be at that place of no thought. If you found yourself thinking, just focus on the sound of your mantra and return to no thought. My mind had convinced me that it was my God, and so I had to listen to it above all else. Listening to our minds can be like listening to a bad TV news station. Both play a mixture of bad news, tragedy, hopelessness, with tidbits of kindness and rescue, just enough to keep us coming back and tuning in. How you think about yourself, your future, your past and present, other people, your body, what's possible for you, whether you should live or die, are all creations of your mind, and you listen to them, just as I do. Meanwhile, your body is striving to grow, be nourished, heal and repair itself, protect itself, fulfill its needs, allow the various organs and systems to do their specialized works in order to help us survive and thrive. Contrast what your body is trying to do with what your mind is saying to you about you, life, God, and others. Isn't it time that we pay more attention to the wisdom of the body, the consciousness of the cells, and less to the chattering and nattering mind? There is an idea that permeates highly spiritual thought of surrender of the selfhood. Surrender of the selfhood to the divine power you would call God and which I call divine consciousness. Earlier I was thinking about the need to feel remorse. I realized that to feel remorse, I would have to accept that I did things wrong and I didn't do things right. One of the seven needs I regularly talk about are survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, plus two, with the need to be right as the first of the two. The need to be right is an amazingly demanding need, literally driving people and nations into war. It occurred to me that this need to be right is one powerful impulse to protect and maintain our individuality, our selfhood, against all others. And this need is driven by the mind and the ego, not the body. When I repeat the idea that all conflicts and upsets that you and I will have will contain one or more of these three factors. 1. Unfulfilled expectations. 2. Thwarted intentions. 3. Undelivered or unreceived communication. I am saying mind and ego react as if the selfhood, the very individuality that we consider ourselves to be, is under attack. that falsehood is transmitted to the body, which then becomes activated as if it were true. This is an example of the mind's erroneous processing that negatively affects the body's normal functioning. When we go into fight or flight or freeze, and we exit the growth mode, we're setting ourselves up for future problems. If you were to think of a seriously out-of-control ego and mind as if it were a narcissistic warmonger, you wouldn't be far off. And this is why spiritual practices such as prayer and meditation are designed to return the ego to its proper place in our lives, serving the higher us and not letting the egoic us be in charge of our lives. While I can say that most of our problems originate from our mind, we still need to address the problem of physical cravings. Some experts in addiction are convinced that most addictions are actually mental emotional attachments to behaviors rather than a bodily attachment to a substance. However, looking at the current opioid addiction epidemic, we could see that overprescribing of oxycodone by doctors who overlook the dangers of addiction and the patient population seeking legitimate relief from pain or less legitimate escape from unpleasantness of their lives are mentally driven processes. I don't want patients calling in the middle of the night asking for more pain meds, so I have been advised by other doctors to write prescriptions for 30 to 60 doses. Therein lies part of the problem. When I quit smoking cigarettes in January 1975, I realized how addictive the physical processes of smoking were. All of a sudden, I had so many hands that were no longer occupied, tapping the packs of cigarettes before I opened them, flicking open and closed my Zippo lighter, flicking the ashes off the end of the lighted cigarette, having a favorite ashtray around me, inhaling slowly and deeply, exhaling slowly, and so on. Going to bars for drinks is similar, but for many men it's a social activity like a second family that becomes a ritual. The mind encourages these activities as if they give peace and pleasure, but a deeper examination shows the mind to be a liar. Poisoning the body doesn't give peace or pleasure. Spending limited money in return for very little value does not give peace or pleasure. It makes health and financial issues more dire. Here's a process to try. Make it a game. When you receive awareness about something that needs to be done, and that thought will arrive, and you'll go, oh, I need to do X, notice which advisor jumps into your thoughts to influence you to do it, or not do it. Did your mind tell you not to do it for there are any number of reasons similar to this? Oh, it'll be too tiring and you don't have enough energy. It would take too long and you don't have enough time. There's too much uncertainty of outcome, so disappointment and bad feelings are likely to be the result. Or were you able to start moving your body to accomplish what needed to be done, while letting your mind become quiet as you did the work? It seems that the body or the mind will be in charge. Now, it would be ideal if both body and mind worked together on projects. This is called being in the zone by those who can achieve it. Just knowing your tendencies to bond and reject and how your body and your mind tend to work will increase the quality of communications and your abilities to create your own desired life. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized prayer from the book Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. It's letter 8, Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive presence, awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.